Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
VoxMarkets.co.uk/app. APP, that is. Download it, okay, to your smartphone. It's on Android, it's on iPhone, and you can get free updates to the front screen of your phone. By the way, the download is free as well. It's all free. It's priceless, though. Free but priceless. And I won't start the podcast until you download that, okay? Oh, I can't wait that long. Okay, on today's podcast, it's episode 1105. It is the 29th of June, 2018. I have Robert Price, Chairman and CEO of Highlands Natural Resources, that's H&R. And Robert gives an update on the gas analysis at their Kansas Nitrogen Project and also other parts of the business he talks about too. Plus, I also have Michael Masterman, Chairman of W Resources, W-R-E-S. And Michael provides an update on development at its flagship La Perilla Tungsten Project in Spain. I also have Paul Haywood, Director of Block Energy, BLOE, talks about the acquisition of an additional 20% interest in the highly prospective West Rostavi license in Georgia. Also, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Georgian mining, Bushveld Minerals, Afritin, and Solgold. And Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about Avisora Resources, ASO, Redcentric, RCN, and Manx Telecom, Manx ticker there. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Robert Price, Chairman and CEO of Highlands Natural Resources, HNR is the ticker there. Robert, thanks for joining me.
Justin, it's a pleasure to be here with you on Vox Markets, and yeah, Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it wasn't long ago we were chatting, but you've, even in that short space of time, you've released quite a few bits of news, so we'll catch up on those in a bit. Before we do, Robert, for someone who's not heard of the company before, how would you summarize it for them?
Oh, Justin, we have several projects, with all of them having truly some great upside. Our first segment of the business is well productivity, which includes DT Ultravert and a new acquisition of 46,000 acres in Arizona on a CO2 structure. That's the first part of the business. Second part of the business is we're drilling shale oil and gas in the Denver-Julesburg Basin in Colorado. We had very successful results from our first two shale wells. These are two-mile horizontal wells where we've partnered with True Oil from Wyoming and Halliburton to fund our project. We have a carried 7.5% interest on those wells. Justin, it's creating cash flow within Highlands. But we didn't stop there from a shale standpoint. We started leasing our West Denver project. We're in the middle of a leasing campaign. We originally announced to the market that we have leased over 2,000 acres, and now we continually increase our acreage holding, and now we're up to 2,721 acres, and we're continuing to expand. So that's our shale plays. East Denver, get a carried interest. We have a 100% working interest in West Denver that we continue to lease. And then we have a project in Montana that we're attempting to de-risk. It's a methane and helium project that has over 220,000 acres. So that's a real quick summary, Justin, of our three segments of Highlands.
Yeah, well, normally when I ask for a summary, people can summarize their business in a minute, but with you it's quite hard because you've got a lot going on there. But hopefully that's a very good summary of what's going on. Let's go into some specific news. So you've had some news out there, a gas analysis update for the Canvas Nitrogen project. So how's it going there? What's the news here, Robert?
Well, Justin, when you drill a good well, it's hard to keep a good well down. And so we did recently did a 24-hour test on the well, and the well is continuing to increase, continuing to clean up. And so our last flow rate, 24-hour flow rate, and this is a flowing flow rate at over 600 pounds pressure, it's 2,581 MCF a day. And that is a very powerful well. And the exciting news, Justin, is we just got the gas analysis back. We sent it back to different labs. We wanted to compare them, and they were all similar. We have over 99.5% nitrogen. And let me say, Justin, that opens up the door for many opportunities. When we originally started on this project, we were focusing on decreasing the cost for DT Ultravert, one of our well productivity parts of the segment of the business. Well, now that we know that we have pretty close to pure nitrogen, this opens up many opportunities to be able to sell nitrogen to industrial gas uses, food processing uses, and many more. So we can use it for DT Ultravert and many more. Justin, this is truly transformational, what we just discovered. Not only drilled it, have a highly productive well, but now we have close to pure nitrogen. So it's a pretty exciting time here at Highlands.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be honest, that's not all the news, because you've had other bits of news that are out, and like you mentioned in the summary there, you've acquired some leases, or prospective leases, for CO2. To take us through this, what's the thoughts here?
Yeah, Justin. When Highlands was originally founded 3 years ago, we wanted to, the overall philosophy is let's take advantage of declining oil and gas prices, particularly oil prices. And if you remember back to 2014, going into 2015, the oil market started going down, and it's only recently started to rebound. Well, back in 2014, a company named Kinder Morgan acquired part of a CO2 field, and they proposed to build a CO2 line and develop this field, and their total expenditure, keep in mind, this is 2014, they were going to spend $900 million. Well, when the price started collapsing in 2015, they suspended their pipeline project, and it's been in suspense since. Mm-hmm. Well, Justin, that was perfect opportunity for us with the increase in oil prices to be able to get the other part of this CO2 field. And so for a very inexpensive price, we applied for the leases with the state of Arizona. We're waiting for final ratification of the leases. And so the markets for CO2, when Kinder Morgan was going to spend this $900 million, Justin, they were going to put it in a pipeline, and they're going to send it to the Permian Basin. And it's used for enhanced oil recovery. And Kinder Morgan, one of their subsidiary companies, is producing over 50,000 barrels a day through enhanced oil recovery. Well, they need the CO2 and they need the supply of it. And so that's what we're really excited about, is be able to sell the CO2 to the Permian players. And that's more long term because you need a pipeline for it. But CO2 is, there's so many different uses, and we can truck the CO2 from the field. There's been recent news about shortages of CO2 in the UK and yeah. throughout Europe. Here in the United States, there's many uses, not only in the food processing, the beverage business, but agricultural business as well. So that's another cornerstone of our company. What we started out, Justin, exploring for well productivity, it's actually expanding the markets from the nitrogen discovery to be able to sell it to the food industry and other industrial uses, and now CO2 to be able to sell it to others. So you never know where you start, but where we started was well productivity. And because we've discovered the nitrogen in Kansas, and we know that it's pure nitrogen at 99.5%, it opened up a world of marketing opportunities for that nitrogen. And we're looking forward to advancing the CO2 project as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't let you go before you give us a quick update on the East Denver project. What's happening there at the moment, Robert?
Well, what we're doing, Justin, is we drilled the first two wells. They were in the top 3 percentile of wells in the Denver-Julesburg Basin. Just these first two wells each made almost 100,000 barrels of oil in their first 6 months. That's extraordinary wells. We were able to acquire lands, first of all. We were able to bring in non-dilutive private equity. We are able to market the oil, market the gas, and that was just two wells. Well, we sold part of the interest in the first two wells, which created cash for Highlands, and then we retained a 7.5% carried interest. So Halliburton is funding these wells. The True Oil Company from Wyoming is funding these wells. And now we are assisting True with the operations, and we are drilling an additional six wells. So when these wells come online towards the end of this year, that will create additional significant revenue for Highlands, having that interest. If these wells are as good as the first two wells, it would be fairly significant, Justin.
Yeah, well, it sounds and quite... Go on.
Yeah, so in the East Denver project, we had farm out agreements. It was a little bit more complicated just from overall contractual standpoint. What we're doing right now in West Denver, Justin, is we are leasing a new project in the DJ Basin. We originally started with over 2,300 acres. Now we're up to over 2,700 acres. And these are actual leases that Highlands owns 100% of. And we have we continue the leasing campaign. Hopefully we'll continue to increase our leasehold position. We'll certainly update the market. But again, what we did with East Denver, we established that we can identify good geological formations for shale plays. We have proven that we can bring in private equity. We have proven that we can operate these wells. And so it's our hope to do the same thing with West Denver.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, it looks like it's going well on all fronts there, Robert. But if someone's listening and likes the sound of it, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, let me say, first of all, quick update on Montana. It's still very high risk. We have 220,000 acres there. We hope to be de-risking it, but I just want to point out that it's still in the high-risk category. But if we turn on the lights, when we open up that third zone, it could be very positive for Highland. So that's one reason, is potential upside with minimal costs in Montana. The second reason, we have East Denver that's generating cash flow every single month into Highlands. Mm-hmm. And we're increasing that cash flow with drilling these additional six wells. So we'll have a total of eight wells there. They're generating revenue for Highlands. And finally, on West Denver, we're going to do the same thing we did on East Denver. But Justin, we have 100% of it, and we have better lease terms. And so that's, we're really excited about West Denver. Mm-hmm. And finally, Justin, what we just discovered in Kansas is very significant for Highlands. We have a nitrogen discovery. The well is flowing. It's powerful flow rates at over 600 pounds, over 2.5 million cubic feet a day. And with that, we're marketing, we're beginning efforts to market the nitrogen, and we have really done well, and we have really exposed all the shareholders to what could be incredible upside in Highlands.
Absolutely. Robert, thanks for chatting, and like I said, a lot's going on, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Oh, Justin, take care. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Masterman, Chairman of W Resources, W-R-E-S. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Justin, good to be on Vox.
And thanks for squeezing us in just before your AGM, which is always interesting. You get to sort of chat to shareholders and stuff there. And, of course, you do that right here in the podcast. So if anyone's listening, Michael, and not familiar with W Resources, how would you summarise the business to them?
So W Resources is focused on tungsten mine development in Spain and Portugal, and we've also got some very good copper and gold assets. Flagship mines, La Perla in southwestern Spain, and that's under development and will start production in the first quarter 2019.
Excellent stuff. 2019, not far off now, first quarter there. So you released a bit of news, RNS, entitled Crusher, Steelwork and Equipment Deliveries Commence at La Perla. That just shows how close it is. So take us through, you know, the activity on the ground there, if you could, Michael.
Okay. Well, if you can imagine the plant, there's three core components for it. The crusher that crushes the ore, the jig that separates the high-grade tungsten from the lighter mass, and then the concentrator that turns it into the final concentrate that we produce. We've been going flat out since we secured the BlackRock financing on the 14th of February, and now you're starting to see things move very quickly on site. The civil works for the crusher have been completed. The steel works arriving. Metso, who's providing the primary equipment, will shortly commence their deliveries, and we're on track to have the crusher completed and commissioned in the December quarter. So, you know, a very short period of time from today. The jig, which is the second part of the plant, is also proceeding very quickly, and we expect to be able to have the jig plant completed and commissioned prior to Christmas. So if we can get two of the core pieces of the plant development finished by then we've got a clear run to finish the concentrator in the first quarter of 2019, and then we move into large-scale production.
Yeah, so this is, as far as we're concerned, is it all on schedule here?
Yes, no, very, very much on schedule and on budget. We're, the very fact that we're looking at finishing the crusher and the jig prior to Christmas is very positive, and I think from an execution perspective is also very important for the project. We're very well financed in achieving this objective.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's scroll forward. Let's say you get those two parts in, then you get the concentrator up running, and you start producing when you say you're going to produce. What is the run rate like? What are you hoping to produce, and how much is it going to be worth to you? Ballpark figure, of course, because you know, things do change, prices do change. But what are you looking at?
Okay, so we're in the stage we're building at the moment. We're looking at 2,700 tons per annum of concentrate, which will deliver $60 million US a year of revenue, and will clear $20 million in profit. So, if you want to put that in context, for W Resources' current market capitalization, we've currently got a £22 million market cap, and we're looking at $20 million of earnings. So, we're trading at very, very low earnings multiples at the moment, and as each month goes by, we're getting closer and closer to moving to large scale production.
Yeah, so you could your earnings could almost buy a company within 1 year. So
that's right.
There's no multiple at all for that. That's decent stuff. Excellent stuff. Well, Michael, listen, I'll let you go off to the AGM. I'm sure you know you got things to chat about there. But before you do, for people listening to this, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, number one, La Perla's financed. Development is moving very steadily towards production in the first quarter, and we're going to generate significant earnings in 19 and 20 and onwards. Secondly, we have a wider portfolio of tungsten projects that will add further tungsten production and profitability, and we've got some very exciting developments on the gold and copper front to follow.
Marvellous stuff. Michael, good to chat to you, and hopefully, I think that's your calling. Michael Masterman, please come to the AGM room. Michael, thanks for that, and hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Justin. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Haywood, Director of Bloch Energy. That's BLOE ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having us.
And it's been a heck of a rollercoaster ride. It's been, almost a week?
Yeah, we're a few weeks into our own listing now, and it's extremely busy times, to say the least.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've just been looking every day. I cover the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the podcast, and you have featured in that list quite a few times, which is quite good for a newly listed company, because, you know, it takes a long time to get the story out there. But for people not aware of the story, Paul, could you explain or summarise what is Bloch Energy all about, please?
Sure. We're an E&P company listed on AIM, of course. We've got a working interest in three production sharing contracts in the Republic of Georgia. We've got 100% and 90% working interest in Norio and Satskanesi license areas, which are currently producing oil. We've got a 5% working interest in West Vestavi, which we've most recently increased to 25%.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, we'll get into that news in a bit. Look at the detail of this. So go through, again, in more detail now, what you're involved in and anything you know about the contingent resources, and why have you increased your stake in that licence there?
Yeah, sure. The plan for West Vestavia has always been to farm into a 75% working interest. Mm-hmm. The license hosts, the license area hosts a significant amount of vertical opportunity. Beyond 1,000 metres, our oil and gas bearing zones, the upper, middle and lower Eocene, cover over 1,500 metres. And for those that are familiar with the City of London, that's Bank Station to Chancery Lanes as the crow flies. So it's a significant amount of prospective area there. An immediate analogue to the oil and gas discoveries that have been had in West Vestavi are located in the neighbouring Samgori field, which at its peak produced around 70,000 barrels of oil a day from poorly drilled vertical wells back in the late 60s and early 70s. This field has recently been acquired by Schlumberger, who are now drilling their first gas appraisal well. And the plan for Bloch throughout West Vestavi is to do exactly the same. We've had, as I mentioned, we've had gas and oil discoveries throughout the permits, and first and foremost, the company's plan is to get back into some of those gas discoveries and retest those gas bearing zones.
Okay, and when is that happening, Paul?
We'll be retesting by the end of this year. The plan is to get on with that work shortly after completion of Schlumberger's well, for obvious reasons. It's point, you know, it makes sense for us to learn from what they're doing next door. So, yeah, the read across is immediate. So, yeah, the plan is to complete that retest work shortly after the Schlumberger drill is complete.
Yes. Okay. So at the moment, I mean, what's your target? Hopefully, I mean, I assume you have a target, but what's the target, hopefully, of barrels per day you hope to achieve by when? And what is it at the moment, Phil?
So we're currently producing 20 barrels of oil a day. That pretty much pays for our local OPEX and local G&A costs. So the fields are pretty much break even as they stand. The immediate plan is to get on with some reactivation work in our Satskanesi field and recomplete 8 to 10 wells in Norio. We expect that work to take us up to around 400 barrels a day by the end of the year. The reactivation work is going to be starting in Satskanesi towards the end of next month. We've currently got the guys in the field preparing the wells for the reactivations, etc. Norio will start shortly thereafter. We expect the Norio work to kick off in around September, and that's where most of that 400 barrels of oil a day is going to come from. But in parallel to all of that work, and as mentioned earlier, we'll be getting on with the with preparing the wells for the retests and horizontal side tracks in West Rastavi.
Okay, so yeah, it's excellent stuff, and it's looking good. So what's, I mean, at the moment the oil price is looking strong, isn't it? So but what is your sort of your all-in cost there then, Paul?
All-in costs are around, at $70 oil, is around 110 barrels of oil a day production. So, you know, four to 500 barrels a day, we're in a very comfortable place and would see ourselves generating a significant amount of free cash flow, which we then plan to recycle back into operations and further develop our existing fields.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And Georgia is known as a very sort of oily place, isn't it? But they've got this issue where they've hardly had any workovers since the 70s, 60s, 70s. But the potential is still very big, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interestingly enough, since the breakup of the Soviet Union, Justin, a lot of the focus from the smaller contractors that have gone into Georgia has mm-hmm. been focused in and around kind of production of oil. But gas is yeah. most definitely our focus going forward. And the West Rastavi license has been attributed an independent contingent resource of 608 BCF. And kind of just to put things into perspective there for our audience, Georgia currently imports 100% of its gas from Azerbaijan and Russia, which Azerbaijan's off to the east, Russia's to the north. The Georgian government are paying around $5.50 per MCF for their own gas. Detailed internal studies suggest that conservatively, our cost to develop and produce gas throughout West Rastavi is about $2 per MCF. So that offers a project net back of around $3.50 per MCF, which most importantly equals an unrisked project value of around $2.1 billion. So, needless to say, you know, going after the gas and proving up the commerciality of the gas that's hosted in the West Rastavi permit is our key focus going forward.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Paul, well, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making and your plans and your targets, but are not yet following the company, which is, you know, most likely because you're, like I said, newly listed, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, first and foremost, I'd say look, this is an extremely busy time for the company. Our activity is stacked with high impact events, which we are fully funded to execute. I believe the market is still digesting Block as we are new to the market, and it's now management's job to ensure that the company's plans and activities communicated clearly to the market. So lots of interesting things to stay in touch with, and that's it.
Excellent stuff. Paul, good to chat to you. And like I said, quite a bit going on, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Justin. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. It's John Mayer. You all right, John?
Yes, on good form, thank you. Great weather.
Yes, and I understand you've been hanging about, or you will be hanging about, around about some conference, some mining journal conference, is that right?
Yes, I've got to give a speech on technology in the mining sector this afternoon, so I'm getting warmed up for that.
Yes, yeah. Okay, cool. And how long will the speech be? Is it songs and dances involved as well?
Well, 20 minutes for talking, and then I think another 5 or 10 minutes for throwing eggs and vegetables.
Yeah. No, I think you're going to say, then 5 minutes for the song at the end, the big finale.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. And what will be, you know, what are you saying there? What are you saying? You know, you've obviously got, do you write the speech out, or is it all in your head?
I've prepared 24 slides. They give me prompts and ideas, and then I talk about the thing about my experiences in the mining sector and what I think is of interest to the audience. So the key point is that technology has always been in the mining sector, and that if you look at, for example, the iron ore industry in Western Australia, technology has enabled mining companies to cut costs from around $40 a ton to $20 a ton, and that enables Rio Tinto and BHP and the others to make billion-dollar profits that you couldn't have imagined 10, 15 years ago. So technology has really come through and is becoming very, very important in the space.
Yeah, cool. All right, marvellous stuff. Well, let's get into individual stocks, John. And what did you think of, we haven't heard from them for a while, but Geo, Georgian Mining Corporation, released a bit of news. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, as an analyst, I feel frustrated with Georgian Mining. This morning, they've announced yet a further delay. I don't think it's their fault. The government of Georgia, or the Prime Minister, unexpectedly resigned following some protests, and those protests were over management of the economy and that kind of thing. The same party still in power, the Georgian Dream Party. So they've elected a new prime minister.
He's, is that what they call the Georgian Dream Party?
Yeah, it's a great name for a government.
Yeah, but do you know what? It doesn't make me take them seriously. The Georgian Dream Party, you know? It just seems that their heads in the clouds, but there we are.
There's nothing, you know, like a dream.
Yeah. So what, there's been delays here, but, what's your thoughts then? So carry on, sorry,
I've decided to cut my recommendation to a hold. I feel frustrated with further delays. This is a project that could have actually started mining nearly a year ago with fairly strong cash flow generation, and there's been one delay after another. Now, they tell me that the new Minister of Mines should be formally sworn in shortly, and that potentially they could have their permits signed off within days. But let's see what happens. I mean, what's in the ground won't change. I still believe there's lots of copper, lots of gold there, but feel very frustrated that they're not able to get in and start drilling this right now.
Yeah, and it doesn't, you know. I mean, this may be just a final set of delays. We don't know. But, at the moment, it just seems like this is going to be ongoing, isn't it? I mean, it just feels. I mean, obviously, that may not be accurate saying that. But when it starts off with these kind of stumbling blocks and hurdles and delays, you just feel this is par for course now, you know. And so it doesn't put a good positive spin on the whole project, does it, you know?
Well, I think they will get back on track, but I'm just a bit concerned as to when. So I'd rather sort of reset expectations and let's see where we go from here. At the same time, they did announce that they've had a number of approaches from investors and potential strategic partners. So that is interesting. But of course, we don't know what that's going to turn into. Is that going to sort out the Russian joint venture partner in some way? Although we understand he's very much on side these days. Or are they able to, are they able to receive a certain amount of money in?
Yeah. Well, it says it has received recently a number of approaches from financial and strategic investors. But then it says at some time, Geo is reviewing opportunities presented within the Tethyan Belt, focused on regions close to existing licensed portfolio. So what does that mean? As a result, Geo is pleased to announce this point. Yeah, okay. So what does that mean? What does that say to you, John?
Well, it says that it says there is interest in this project. It says that there are companies that are very keen to take an investment in that. But it's difficult to know how this will crystallise itself. So we have to wait and see.
What do we know? That I mean, let's have a refresher here, because it seems to have been a while now since we knew it was. So you say that you believe there's lots of copper in the ground there. What do we know about this apart from the jurisdiction there and the geology there associated with that? What do we know? What are the facts and figures here?
Well, we know this is a deposit and a project that it sticks out of the ground. It's great elevation. We know there are a number of drill holes into it that show very good grades of copper, sensible grades of gold over the top of that in gold oxide form. So we know a certain amount that is very tantalizing. What we need to see next is infill drilling to demonstrate to us what the resource is and what the real value of this project is. And until we get a bit more detail on that, it's difficult to put some hard numbers on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. So is it basically a sit and wait story at the moment again?
It is very much so. I mean, that's why I've left it at a hold. It's very much let's see where we go from here.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. All right. So you mentioned what else are you looking at? Bushveld, I think you mentioned.
Bushveld Minerals. The operating environment for them looks very good. The vanadium price is still over $60 a kilo. That's a good price for ferrovanadium. And at the same time, the South African rand has fallen. Looks like it's due for its largest ever monthly fall this month, falling another 1.3% this morning. That helps to lower costs because they're a dollar earner. They're selling quite a lot of vanadium into the world market at the moment. They represent about 5% of world supply. Demand is good. The Chinese have had to restrict supply at their end because of their green shield environmental policies. And this is just generally good. So I think Bushveld are on track to produce very significant cash flow and earnings this year. The vanadium price is good. The operating costs are coming down, partly because their unit costs are falling anyway. The one fly in the ointment is that the South African Ministry of Mines is due to update the market on where they are with the new mining laws. It's possible that the Black Economic Empowerment Stake requirement might increase to 30%. So that would be a small fly in the ointment. But for me, that's a minor issue. And I think Bushveld will ride that one quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's up there now. It's a triple-digit market cap, and that, you know, they've got that vanadium exposure. And I did, you know, sort of tweet out today just some of the metals prices this morning, and there weren't much positive amongst it. But someone did say you haven't got vanadium in there. It wasn't within that table, and I'm just thinking, where now? Do you know of any stocks, John? I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you know of any stocks, small cap, you know, micro cap, that have decent exposure to vanadium?
Well, there are some exploration companies. They're not. There's Ironveld, which is in the UK, but most of the exploration companies with vanadium are non-UK listed. So there are some in Canada and Australia.
Yeah.
The problem with those is it costs an awful lot of money to build a vanadium processing plant, and anything they do, Bushveld Minerals can do better, can do quicker, and can do much more cheaply. So for me, Bushveld is the play for vanadium.
Okay.
If they want to double their vanadium production capacity, it would cost them a half to a third of that of just about anyone else in the business. So that's a very compelling argument. It's possible that Bushveld could double their production capacity. That would help to reduce their costs, and they can do it without too much trouble.
Yeah. Cool. Marvellous. Okay, anything else? I mean, I think you did mention Soul Gold.
Well, in fact, we could mention Afritin, in which Bushveld Minerals has a 17.5% stake.
Yeah.
They announced
Well, do you know
that.
What? I did ask you what they did, and I realised that, you know, they do what it says on the tin, which is a tin in Africa.
Exactly. Yes, they've got what is a low-grade tin project in Namibia, which would ordinarily be slightly uninteresting. But what they announced earlier this week was that they can upgrade the percentage of that tin or the grade of that tin using a very simple dense media separation process. And suddenly they've got a project that actually looks like it has real value. So that for me is quite exciting. And at £15 million, it's a relively cheap stock.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Happy tin. And anything else worth chatting about?
As you were about to suggest, Soul Gold. Very good result from one of the other exploration projects. I think it was 292 meters of 0.6% copper. That's a good number. So they've already got the very large Alpala project at Cascabel, which they're drilling, and they've got 12 drilling rigs running at the moment, which is a monumental amount of data and information to handle. And if anything, they have a sort of drill core constipation going on right now, because they've just got so many results that they have to process.
Drill core constipation, that does sound uncomfortable. Marvellous, John, that's good. Well, listen, good luck at the conference later on, and is it recorded on YouTube? I mean, because it'll probably be up there with that billion view sort of YouTube video. What's that pop song? Gangnam Style. You'll probably comparison sort of view figures to that, I assume, your talk on it.
I suspect if you knocked a few zeros off, you might get to that. These things usually often end up on the web somewhere, but I think stick with the Gangman Style video. That'll be more entertaining.
Of course, you'll be wearing a similar suit to Psy from who sings that song. I assume a nice white suit with a black shirt, so just looking the part there.
Now there's an idea. An idea.
Of course, you've got to undo the buttons like Simon Cowell's to reveal your very, very manly, hairy chest there, John, because, that'll attract a few more views, I assume.
Yes, but it will be a specialist video at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Lovely. John, speak next week, fella.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. We weren't on last week because I did see the old sort of Ascot being trailed on the news. I thought, Russ is a big sort of racing fan. I wonder if he's going.
And, yeah, Tuesday and Friday I went.
Yeah, so. Cool. So I assume now your pockets are full, are they?
Cash? Not full, but not much emptier than I had. I had three winners over the 2 days I was there, so I didn't do too badly. But I didn't make any life-changing sums, no.
Okay. And how
was good sport.
How was behaviour there? Because they've been in the spotlight recently, haven't they, these racing people?
I mean, I didn't see any trouble at all. And reading,
you didn't start any, did you?
No, try and avoid doing that as well. There were 300,000 people there last week, and there were 17 arrests, I'm led to believe.
Okay, that's not too bad.
That's not a bad percentage, I don't think.
And they were the horses, probably.
The ones that were going slow, particularly slowly, yes.
Yeah.
But no, cool. It was good fun, and everybody was very well behaved.
Well, it's good, because, it can get,
hot
days, money in your pocket, booze there, it's a combination, isn't it?
It can be a tricky combination.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go for the look at the stocks. What are we looking at, Russ?
Three today. One new one and two updates on things we've looked at previously. So the new one is Avasoro Resources, and the updates are on Redcentric and Manx Telecom.
Avasoro. Okay, what's happening with those then?
It's a gold miner. So first of all, you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it.
Is it AVO?
ASO, I think.
Yes, no, I've seen it mentioned on social media, actually, by a couple of people who follow it.
Yeah, 200 odd million market cap. I mean, again, gold, either you think it's a great store of value and something that is a useful part of any asset allocation strategy, or you can be in the it's a barbarous relic camp, it's inert, it doesn't do anything, and therefore it's worthless. So you're probably going to be 50, one or two on this anyway. I'm interested in it at the moment because nobody's talking about it, and I'm always interested in things that nobody's talking about, and frankly, from a money-making perspective, not very interested in stuff that everybody's talking about.
Exactly. Now,
If you're in, sorry, please.
Yeah, no, I do hold a gold explorer that's got a quite, the shareholder register is stacked with people with lots of big money and who's made it in gold, which makes it very interesting. But also, I've been learning about grades, and whenever I get someone on who's, a geologist, I always ask them and after the podcast to educate me and tell me what I should be looking out for. And I've learned quite a bit about gold, and it does come down to grade, and it comes down to, how many million ounces. Basically, above a million ounces, if you've got a resource that size, you can start getting on to looking at having a standalone mine, and then, but yes, do you know what a good thing to, if you ever look at grades, when you get an RNS come out and it's full of grades and it's gold, and you think, I don't know if there's any good or not. Here's a good standard, and you keep this in your mind. Look for 20 gram meters. By that, what they mean is when they drill down somewhere, so say for example, they drill, say, 100 meters down, and they'll say, there's an intercept here of 10 meters, and it's got 1 meter and it's got 20 grams per ton. That's good because it's 20 grams there in that ton. Or if they drill for 20 meters and it's got 1 gram per ton, that's also good because it's 20 meter grams. So it's divisible. Anything over 20 is very good grade. And it's all about the grade because the less grade you've got, the more processing you have to do, the costs go up.
And the higher the cost.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's all about it. If you're a low cost producer, that's where, you know, if the gold price goes down, it doesn't matter so much, you know?
Job done.
Yeah, yes. But I do like it. I mean, looking into gold.
I'm glad you're on top of the geology because I'm not a geologist. Yeah, so I'm glad somebody's. I tend to approach gold and gold mines more from a sort of macro perspective.
Yeah.
Now, if you think that all is well in the world and everything's hunky dory and central banks are going to keep on tickling interest rates up even at a slow pace, gold is just not going to cut it on balance if history is any guide. Yeah. If you, and that, which seems to be where the stock market is.
Yeah.
If you side with the bond market, where the yield curve is flattening, which is basically the premium that that governments are having to pay to issue 10-year bonds over 2-year bonds is shrinking, that's the bond market's way of saying, well, we think you might raise interest rates now, but in the future, you're just going to have to cut them again. So the bond market is saying, we don't share the enthusiasm that the stock market's got for the global economy. One of them on balance could well be wrong. Now, what the bond market's saying is central banks are at some stage going to think, uh-oh, we've dropped a clanger here. We've boxed ourselves in. We've actually, by cutting rates to zero, encouraged people to borrow too much. We now can't raise interest rates that much because it's going to just have deleterious consequences. Mm-hmm. And they might. And if you think they'll go even one step further and go straight back to the QE playbook, then gold is potentially for you because it's certainly a hedge against further money printing and central bank profligacy. So if you're in the everything's hunky-dory camp, forget it. If you think there's any chance of central banks panicking, overdoing it, this is the kind of macro call that you'd be thinking about. And if you do like gold, now we know there are some smashing big large cap miners out there, they're going to do, you know, will benefit naturally, whether it's the Newmonts or the Barrick Golds or whoever, but you get more gearing into any gold price increase from the small ones if they strike it rich. And Avasoro is interesting. It's a West African player, Liberia, Cameroon, and it bought two sites in Burkina Faso last year. A couple of bits of news that have come out recently. One, first quarter production is running above their predicted full year rate, which is below, which is sort of 220 to 240,000 ounces is what they're forecasting for the year. Costs are about $900 all in, which with a gold price even at 1250 gives them a start. And they're looking to take more costs out of Liberia. There's also just been a resource upgrade at the Burkina Faso, one of the Burkina Faso mines at Yuga, where they're now looking at potentially more work and potentially extending the mine, the mine life. So it's more of a macro call for me. I'll leave the geologists to gurus like you. Numis have got a 420p price target, which is based on 1x book value. Share price are at 250. If gold stays asleep, which has effectively been for 2 years, I can't see the shares doing anything. But if there's any macro upset and if central banks hit the print button at any stage again, kind of stock that could do very well.
But generally, you know, if you look at, I mean, on a very simplistic view, we've been now having a decent run in the stock market for an unprecedented,
10 years.
Yeah, almost
9
unprecedented
years.
Time. You know, it's, and I do believe in the old pendulum formula. Thing goes,
I
things
do
go
too.
One way, and they revert to mean, and they go the other way too far, and then come back to mean. And so I just generally think, you know, I've seen sort of surveys of, you know, Reuters and all that saying that there's a higher percentage now of people sort of starting to think we are heading towards recession. And almost like it's self-fulfilling, isn't it? You know,
it could be. Yeah,
you know, people start to worry about investing, and they pull back a bit. Everyone starts doing that. You know, then,
yeah, I think the U.S. stock market's on its second longest bull run ever now.
Yeah.
But so at some stage, you're going to think, you know, at least things are going to get a bit choppier than they are now. But, you know, you know, you could have said that a couple of years ago, I suppose, and you'd have been wrong. So, you know, we'll see. But I think, you know, with at the moment, dollar going up, oil proving sticky, bank shares under an awful lot of pressure. I mean, I think that is genuinely quite worrying. It's maybe one way of Mr. Market saying that things aren't quite ideal. And with central banks still pussyfooting about, the Fed seems determined. It is draining liquidity. The others are maybe moving towards it very slowly. I think that there are some cross currents out there. You've had cryptocurrencies put through the meat mincer. Low vol strategies have been put through the meat mincer. Emerging market currencies have gone through it. You know, you are starting to see areas where people probably are taking quite a lot of risk beginning to crack.
Yeah.
And generally what you see in bull runs is people start to withdraw from the risky areas first and gradually, you know, move towards the sort of core and things that are seen a little bit safer. And I think you're starting to see that the opening phases of that process, kind of the beginning of the end, as it were,
yeah,
personally.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I've been wrong before.
Yeah, no. I mean, do you know what? Just on a sort of, you know, rather than having to make a decision yourself, you're listening right now. People always say you should always have a bit of gold in your portfolio just to balance things out. So I'm an advocate.
It's a hedge.
I'm an advocate of that. So trying to have a balanced portfolio.
It's gold, a hedge.
Gold should be in there somewhere. Cool. What's next, Russ?
So Redcentric. Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago because they rather sneakily, remember, slipped through a profit warning on a Friday afternoon. Which wasn't exactly ideal. Remember, it's an IT and communication services provider to small and medium enterprises in the public sector. Horrible reputational and financial problems 2 years ago. New management team. And it looked like it had begun to turn around. The share price was responding. And we got the share price break on the chart above a quid. And I thought, right, we're actually onto something here. And then out came that profit warning and it's rattled all the way back to 85p. So now it's, I think, you know, you'll tell me looking at the chart, it's probably a matter of does support hold at 75 to 80p? And at least when the full year numbers came out after the profit warning, there were no new nasty shocks. So that means we can probably afford to stick around. Mm-hmm. Revenues were down 5, okay, but losses went from 3 million to a 900 grand profit. Recurring revenues are now 87% of the business. And net debt came down from 40 to 28 million pounds. So a lot of the things that you'd be looking for as a bull, management's delivered on. The problems are all for the year ahead. Some price pressure in the cloud area because there's an awful lot of people at it. A couple of contract losses as a result. And they've got this enormous contract win in Yorkshire and Humberside for the public sector that's just going to involve an awful lot more upfront cost than they initially imagined. So it is a turnaround story. Still, I think there was enough in the full year numbers to keep you interested. But clearly this year is now going to be a bit of one of treading water. They need to rack up some more contract wins to show that they're on the right track. There is a chance of a dividend in 2019. It's on 18 times earnings this year, 14 times next. Still very depressed earnings. If it goes right, it could be very cheap. It does feel like it's dead money for now. But given that the debt's coming down, your risk's coming down, you can probably just afford to be patient right now. So long as, I would suspect you'll tell me, chart support holds in that 75 to 80p range.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm just looking at it.
Right, RCN and, on M.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. Is that support there? Is there along that line there? And if you drag the, if you zoom out from 2017, it hasn't gone below 80 pence very often, you know?
No.
So you could say there's nice little strong support.
It's about 85p now having rattled back from over a quid, rather frustratingly, early in June.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And the last is Manx Telecom.
Manx. On AIM, Isle of Man telecoms provider, as the name would rather suggest, mobile telecoms and broadband. It's a yield play, 6 to 6.5% dividend yield. But the share price, have you seen the chart?
Let me have a look. Manx.
Have a look. Tell me what you think.
M-A-N-X, yes. It's not looking very pretty,
It's not a work of beauty, is it, Justin? I think... You know,
it's literally bouncing under that 200-day moving average all the time. So it tries to break above it, then it doesn't quite do it, and then comes back below, and it's making lower lows, you know, all the time.
I'm not a chart guy, but I know when we last talked about it in March, and I said, well, it looks okay. The full year numbers were a bit messy. There is earnings cover for the dividend about 1.2 times, but free cash flow cover's got down to about 1 times. So it is getting, if there anything goes wrong, and you know, there's no intimation from management that it is, but if anything does, your free cash flow cover for your dividends getting a bit skinny. And, you know, you said to me, look, if it goes below 180, I'd be right out of there and blow me down. It's gone below that. And it just reminded me of the charts that we've seen on things that, you know, I've got wrong in other areas like Centrica and Connect. It's just the same shape chart, top left, bottom right. And I'm just going to think, okay, I Mr. Market can't be right all the time or we'd none of us would ever be able to make any money. But Mr. Market's views must always be respected. And given that the full year numbers were okay, but not brilliant, free cash flow cover's getting thin, and the chart's pig ugly, I'm going to just move on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a support, you know, a bit of support, 170, it's 176
there you
now.
Go. Bounced off that last autumn, didn't it?
Yeah, so you may have a bit of respite there, but we'll see.
Anybody looking for capital gains? No. Income, you've got that 6% yield. Fine, but again, if anything goes wrong with a sort of turnaround story that you've got there, you do have a slightly exposed dividend. And at the moment, we are seeing a few more. We had Stagecoach recently, you know, Connect recently. So there are a few of those fat yielders that it has started to go wrong. So, again, it just doesn't feel like a time to be taking too many chances right now.
Exactly. Marvellous stuff. Russ, have a nice weekend.
Have a super weekend. Enjoy the sunshine.
Yes, and we'll speak next week.
I look forward to it.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Block Energy, BLOE, of course,
I just had Paul on the podcast. At four, Rockfire Resources. Rock is the ticker there. R-O-C-K, man. At three, Rehobold Resources, RBD. At two, really? The People's Operator, T-Pop. And I think some would say it's about to go T-Pop. And at number one, UK Oil and Gas, UCOG is the ticker there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs come from Sound Energy, Eastern Morocco, New Basin Model. At four, Frontera Resources, that's Final Results and Post-Period Operations Update. At three, Echo Energy, Echo, appointment of CFO. At two, UK Oil and Gas, Interim Results. And number one, most popular RNS, I'm so glad we got to two of the most popular RNSs we got guests on the show from. So it's the Highlands Natural Resources Gas Analysis Update for the Kansas Nitrogen Project, which I talked about to Robert earlier in the podcast. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.